welcome to the A-News Podcast. This episode 9 is for April 29th. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week and beyond. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. On our minds this weekend, we are heading to another book fair this weekend, this one in beautiful Humboldt County, and it's worth the trip for the location alone. What's unusual about this book fair, which is at least the seventh iteration of, is that it is entirely unconcerned with anarchist theory. It has taken the question of the mind-body split, and it has chosen the body. On our minds as we approach this event is how can we get past these kinds of absurd divisions in anarchism to build something that is more holistic and generally agreeable than just being seen as the left wing of the left wing of capitalism? How can we make it clear that our project is not just ameliorating the worst consequences of capitalism and the state by way of charity and doing good work, and instead find others who hate this world and want to engage in the hard work of building something new, destroying what is killing us, and finding each other. Our editorial this week is again about Antifom. I apologize for this, but as chance would have it, this podcast is based in Berkeley, California. And yesterday we spent the day listening to helicopters overhead and reading headlines about how a free speech rally in our downtown was peaceful due to a total lack of opposition to the pro-Trump, pro-America free speech crowd. One imagines that our friends with jobs, who are currently organizing as Antifa, must be pretty frustrated at this turn of events. A canceled event, ostensibly a speech by Ann Coulter on the UC Berkeley quad, turns into a symbolic victory for the alt-right, as the event was peaceful, due to lack of opposition. An anarchist knows that this whole charade is public relations from top to bottom. Yes, those who are organizing against these idiots should feel sheepish that these idiots can organize a public presence during a weekday afternoon for a canceled event. But they should quickly turn to laughter, as the idea of interrupting your life to protest in the shadow of Ann Coulter's better judgment is funny. Laugh. And to be frank, if there's going to be a flock of dressed-up-for-battle, flag-waving, sports-equipment LARPers wandering around Berkeley looking for a fight, I'm glad that none of my frenemies were out there prepared to be a target. Perhaps this should be considered a hard lesson easily learned. The right do naturally gravitate towards personalities. Strongmen like Gavin McInnes, the new eunuchs of the 21st century, Ann Coulter and Milo, the mythology of base stickman or the Spartan. Anarchists, unlike the broader left, prefer to remain anonymous, and the new 4chan tactics of taking pictures of every black-clad participant of these clashes to dox later is going to make public events very public. To restate the point for today, is there any particular reason that anarchists should put themselves out there to confront pro-Trump free speech advocates? Isn't this the concern of Democrats and others who play at political, electoral games? Is there anything for an anarchist position to gain in this particular kerfuffle? If you read between the lines of the reportage I saw, the students at Berkeley High were as confrontational to the all-right, alt-right, fuck Antifa event as any black-clad partisan could be. Are citizens the more natural participants in games of protest and demonstration than those who would wish to abolish the state? I get it. This has turned into a safe way to get some practice at resistance against overwhelming odds and at learning how to message, frame, and proselytize a position. All I'm saying is that being against a bunch of morons isn't exactly our, as anarchists, position. Of course we're against the morons who dress up in flag capes and ancient helmets, just as we're against the armored state thugs who would corral them, the journalists who photograph every inch of this event, and the idea that our position isn't for a world free from coercion, but instead just against the coercion of a particular set of absurd protesting.
What's new this week? Same battle, new field. Problems of opportunism and organization. This is a page from the British website Libcom and displays the website's normal focus on the working class and revolution. This particular article discusses the weakness of organizing in the model of Saul Alinsky and the left.
Pure Black, an emerging consensus among some comrades? A non-sectarian exercise attempting to clarify the meaning of a newly popular term, black anarchy, reflecting on nihilism but not entirely contained in it. Quote, in this instance, nihilism I'll interpret as the real politic of anarchism in 2017. All the various ideas, concepts, and conceits of an anarchist victory via revolution or insurrection in the current context are nothing more than political heroin. Once this simple, obvious fact is accepted, there are two courses: resignation and lassitude, or savage attack without any real hope of success. The black anarchist chooses the latter, always. Unquote.
The French Connection, an interview with Xavier Massot on the growing unrest in France. This is an interview of one of the authors of the Black Bloc papers by the other author of that book. Massot has been living in France for the past 6 months and discusses his analysis of the situation there and some of the commonalities between the situation on the streets there and in the U.S., or at least in Vermont. Quote, Van Dusen, Mr. Massot, what can you tell us about the situation on the ground in Paris? Massot, there are thousands of demonstrators in the streets nearly every day. Most are students and workers. A few hundred, a very small minority, appear to be fascists who are not out to protest the law but to physically attack the left. They, the fascists, are also being counterattacked by the anarchists. But mostly people are angry about the government. While I am generally in agreement with the students and striking workers, it should be understood that the law itself is not necessarily all that bad. It is just what has been picked up as the topic. The greater thing motivating people is a general sense of being a pissed-off society. Unquote.
Benjamin Tucker, American Mutualist. This is a follow-up article on Tucker, one of the most influential market anarchists, and goes in some detail about the system that mutualists support for markets and exchange. Quote, so when employees are paid enough to repurchase the general value they created on the market, there is no economic exploitation. Economic exploitation is also called surplus value. And so employers are no longer capitalists due to the employer no longer being exploitative by not extracting surplus value from the employees, and hence the employer becomes a worker whose wages as an employer is subject to the going rate on the market in their particular industry, just like the employees' wages are subject to the going rates on the market of their particular industry. Unquote.
The collapse of the colonial illusion of being in control. This is a piece by Emile, a longtime anarchist news poster, infamous for working quite hard to express concepts that are hard to communicate in the English language and in this culture. This essay continues those efforts by, among other things, pointing out how people tend to give agency to a limited number of actors who are actually at the whim of far larger forces.
Lessons of the Russian Revolution. Workers' revolutions are different from capitalist revolutions. This is the text of a talk that Wayne Price was supposed to give at a talk he ended up missing. Price continues to be a good faith actor. Quote, the job of a capitalist revolution is to clear the way for the free play of the market. It is to get rid of feudal regulations, aristocratic limitations, slavery, serfdom, guild rules, and monarchical licenses. The revolution establishes a new state, which works to set up the basic conditions of capitalism, an accumulation of wealth, available to be capital, and a free population of propertyless workers, not serfs or urban artisans, needing to sell their labor to the capitalists in order to live. The state may intervene in capitalist economy to a greater or lesser extent, but it does so in order to keep production for the market going. So long as it does this, the exact nature of the capitalist state may vary enormously. It could be a relatively democratic republican state with universal suffrage for all adults. It could be a military junta or a police state. It could be a totalitarian fascist regime. The capitalist class may have much direct influence, as in a capitalist democracy, or very little, as in various dictatorships. In general, the capitalists prefer to run their own businesses and let someone else manage the state. Even in a capitalist democracy, they mostly hire professional politicians to run the government. But as long as the state maintains capitalist production and the market, the system remains capitalist and the state is a capitalist state. A revolution which establishes such a state in any of its possible forms, is a capitalist revolution, unquote.
June 11th, 2017, communication is a weapon. From the website June 11th, International Day of Solidarity with Marius Mason and all long-term anarchist prisoners, that is all the name of the website, this is an article that, like last week's editorial, takes on free speech and how it is different from communication, here within the context of breaking the isolation that is prison, especially for political prisoners, and especially, right now, for Marius Mason. Quote, "This year we challenge ourselves to weaponize our words and gestures to one another to give them teeth. Let's find ways to fight the censorship of those sending messages from the inside and those sending strength and support from the outside. Let us not be satisfied with merely expressing our desires and ideas to whomever is listening, but really live them and develop them together. The state wishes to crush our comrades by separating them from communities of struggle. We will not let it succeed." Unquote.
So what if they did rob the banks? From Plain Words out of Bloomington, we get this forwarded information about the prisoners in Aachen, Germany, who are on trial for bank robbery. The article rejects the state's enforced conversation about guilt versus innocence and includes a timeline of solidarity actions. Quote, "Because we are under assault from this society all our lives, every attack on capitalism and every expropriation of its institutions is self-defense. But that's putting it lightly. All wealth in this world has been stolen, both from extracting resources from the earth and exploiting the work that people do. This has been happening for centuries, the total misery and destitution perpetuated by this system accumulating with every passing minute. As Monsieur DuPont puts it, the structure of the world was built by the dead. They were paid in wages, and when the wages were spent and they were dead on the ground, what they had made continued to exist. These cities, roads, and factories are all their calcified bones. They had nothing but their wages to show for what they had done, and after their deaths, what they did and who they were has been canceled out. But what they made has continued into the present. Their burial and decay is our present. This is the definition of class hatred. We are no closer now to rest, to freedom, to communism than they were. Their sacrifice has bought us nothing. What they did counted for nothing. We have inherited nothing. We work as they worked. We make as they made. We are paid as they were paid." Unquote.
Buffalo, New York, Anarchist Outreach on Earth Day. IGD has a heartwarming and inspiring story about more anarchists who are reaching out to show how normal and safe anarchists really are by cleaning up streets and handing out food. Apparently having taken a lesson from the pothole fillers in the Pacific Northwest, Buffalo Red and Black also handed out political literature in their public relations activity. Their communique included a clever detournement of a classic chant. Quote, "We will continue to clean our streets on a regular, weekly, or bi-weekly basis. Through voluntary means and by free association, Buffalo Red and Black does the work that the city will not. City officials and wealthy residents have no legitimate claim to our streets. It is us, sick, who own our streets. Whose streets? Our streets." Unquote.
Italy. A letter from anarchist comrade Anna Beniamino. Croce Nera Anarchica, A Periodical, issue number 3. From the website Act for Freedom, and translated by them also, this is a letter explaining the events and significance of a trial currently underway in Italy. Quote, "The Inquisitor's choice is clear from the ridiculous framework that appeared in the arrest and warrant papers, a product of the deleterious encounter between the mind of some cop and the rushed reading of a Wikipedia summary. The framework gives shape to a repressive Manichaean vision of a social anarchy, a good and harmless one, and an antisocial and anti-classist, individual anarchy, violent and palatable to repression, whose method is the anti-organizational model. By making the necessary distinctions, this framework aims to define a specific camp, to create a cage, so that a generic insurrectionism, a subproduct of the anti-organizational model, always violent and liable to punishment to varying degrees, subspecies can be pulled out to form distinct different strands of the investigation for Italian cops. Classic insurrectionism, social insurrectionism, eco-insurrectionism, and the informal anarchist federation." Unquote.
Athens, Greece, banner drop in solidarity with Berkeley comrades. There was a banner drop from Themistocleus 58 Squat, quote, fuck all patriots, unquote.
The anarchist roots of the Antiques Roadshow are in Portland. An anarchist in Portland reminisces about how anarchists in Portland have been friendly to and deeply impactful of non-anarchists.
Media projects. Filler number 6, For a University Against Itself. Filler is, quote, a radical zine and distro affiliated with Pittsburgh's Autonomous Student Network, unquote. Quoting folks from Crime Think and Tycoon to After the Fall, communiques from Occupied California, this article is from issue 6 and speaks to organizing both on and off campus in the current era. Quote, in 2017, our teachers are no longer on the defensive. The faculty and graduate students are both organizing with the United Steelworkers, with many comrades among them. But in order for these efforts to force a rupture that reveals the social war raging behind every new Starbucks and tuition hike, radical agitation should also shift to the offensive. The discourse of progress and democracy is especially dangerous after the election of Donald Trump. Radicals working within reformist groups need to exploit the heightened polarization and emphasize an anti-fascist framework if they want to prevent liberals and Trump collaborators from pacifying these campaigns. The radicals on the outside need to familiarize themselves with the new social terrain, identify opportunities for militant disruption, constantly reevaluate their ideas of autonomy, and develop a broader strategy for circulating alternative social ties and desires. If we can't generalize such a conceptual shift soon, popular consensus will normalize not only the Trump regime, but also the impending escalation of reactionary violence and state repression. Unquote.
Insurgent thought in a fragmented world. Ill Will Editions is a multilingual zine project with a focus on, quote, anarchy, anti-politics, proletarian insurrection, transfeminism, Afro-pessimism, anti-prison, anti-cop activity, unquote. Insurgent Thought is a translation by Ill Will of an interview from the mainstream French newspaper Le Monde with two Tycoonistas and Tarnac 9 defendants, Julien Coupat and Mathieu Burnell. Since the willingness of Tycoonistas to be interviewed by the mainstream press is one of the criticisms against them by other radicals in Europe, this is sure to fuel some fires. Here's a quotation from this translated interview. Quote, Le Monde, what do you make of the presidential campaign? Response, what campaign? There was no campaign. There was a soap opera, a fairly worn out one at that, to tell the truth, full of twists and turns, scandals, dramatic tensions and suspense. Much brouhaha, a tiny frenzy, but nothing that managed to pierce the wall of generalized confusion. Not that there is any lack of followers for each candidate, tossing about with varying degrees of fanaticism in their virtual bubbles. But this fanaticism only deepens the feelings of political unreality. A graffiti that went up in the Place de la Nation during the May Day demonstrations last year stated, there will be no presidential election. It suffices to project ourselves ahead to the day after the final round of the election to grasp what's prophetic in this tag. Whatever happens, the new president will be as much a puppet as the current one. The legitimacy of their governance will be just as lacking, just as minoritarian and impotent. This fact isn't solely due to the extreme withering of politics, to the fact that it has become impossible to believe honestly in all that is done and said there, but is likewise due to the fact that politics is a derisory means of confronting the depth of the current disaster, unquote.
Anti-Civ.org relaunch. This announces the reemergence of this forum for all things anti-Civ, which is does not explicitly say it's anarchist, but seems to assume an anarchist perspective.
History of May Day, audio zine. Resonance has a new audio zine on the dual history of May Day, Worker and Pagan.
Anarchist zines and pamphlets published in March 2017. Sprout Distro, sproutdistro.com, announces their publications, including local zines, international zines, issue-based zines on gender or work, for example, and zines for prisoner support.
Fifth Estate, number 398, out now. Billing itself as the longest-running anarchist publication in North America, this magazine has been going for over 50 years with a mix of playfulness, politics, and art. They are also the primary force behind support for Marius Mason, one of our anarchist prisoners. This issue has articles on a wide range of topics, fascism to body cameras to busking to surrealism, with many reviews.
RIP 420, New Zine. A ready-to-print zine out of Canada that is, like Shadow Smoke's blog piece last week, mourning the legalization of pot as it becomes one more way for capitalists to profit from us rather than an encouragement to flaunt the law and resist the status quo. Quote, "Of course, the government and the huge licensed producers who are now going to make a killing on this new industry are the most to blame for all of this. But a lot of us helped them do it, begged them to do it, are now celebrating that they have done it. And fuck that." Unquote.
Podcasts. Post-Proletariat Podcast Episode 2, The March for Science, Trump, Social Democracy. The unnamed person who does the podcast for Post-Proletariat blog is back, giving more of an intro to his rantcast, responding to criticism of his first episode, and using the word ideological the way that Zerzan uses leftist. This episode explains more the argument against anti-positivist bourgeois science, or science as it's used to prop up the current status quo, continues to make assertions without backing them up. Trump is hemorrhaging support. What's that based on? Tries to walk a nuanced line between understanding current events in light of history without losing perspective on what's going on now. This episode equals less ranty.
Anarchy Radio, April 4th, 25, 2017. No co-host this week. Jay-Z acknowledges that there is a place for Antifa, but it is not a good issue to make a totalizing ideology out of. He discusses the March on Science, how the right is adopting postmodernism, is global warming not an objective truth? Science is important for evidence and grounding, even though science and technology are linked. Quote, what is your version of science? End quote. Increasing plastic pollution, icebergs melting, penguins dying, websites that can be helpful, like antisiv.org, which is active again.
This week, the topic of the week is anarchist utopias. Back in the 19th century, visions of a new anarchist society were first articulated, and right before that century ended, Peter Kropotkin published Fields, Factories, and Workshops, a book that was groundbreaking in laying out how an anarchist society could operate. A few decades after that, during the heady days of the Spanish Revolution, Diego Abad de Santillan published After the Revolution, which was similar in its scope and specificity in outlining how an anarchist society can function. This was followed by Bolo Bolo roughly 50 years later. Also in the 20th century, other authors further elaborated on what anarchist societies could look like, such as the late Murray Bookchin and Colin Ward. Now we are in the 21st century, and in a number of respects we are in a different era, with the omnipresent internet, global climate change, and a world population of 7.5 billion humans and counting. With that in mind, how can a future anarchist society look like now, taking the world as it is and going forth from there? Yes, a future anarchist society could very well never come to be. But assuming that this is indeed something that we find desirable and want to see exist, what would this society look like and how could it work? How would things be organized in this new world? Things like group decision-making, economic relationships, and conflict resolution. What would daily life look like? What would families be like, if they exist at all? And what sort of work, or play, would people do to keep the society going? How can the whole thing be practical, sustainable, with everybody happy and healthy, as much as is possible anyway? In other words, beyond mere aphorisms and platitudes, what would a new anarchist society look like to you?
Well, of course, the loaded aspect of this question is that one assumes that the transition between this world and an ATR world or an after the revolution would somehow not impact what the after the revolution would look like. You know, we're celebrating 100 years of the Russian Revolution and that period of the Civil War that ended with the formation of the USSR and began with the Russian Revolution. That period absolutely was the template and the framework by which their ATR was framed. So, you know, the crushing of opposition, the war communism, and you know the leadership of the Bolshevik Party wasn't planned on ahead of time, and because it happened and the way in which it happened, the USSR sort of was a shadow of what it could have been. So leaving that sort of aside, which of course you can't, the question of an anarchist utopia, you know, as someone who is pessimistically inclined or cynically inclined, this question is hard to answer directly, but I will, because I think it is worth at least just saying it out loud. I still love Bolo Bolo. I still think that the silly, subcultural, highly decentralized society that's articulated in the pages of Bolo Bolo, that's the world I want.
Reading the post, I realize, I'm reminded how much time I spent steeped in the world of dystopias, because I have never read or actually, sadly, even heard of the other books mentioned. I feel like you were saying that anarchists can't appropriately reflect upon what a utopia looks like because anarchists aren't, because we don't reflect, we can't talk about, we can't envision what the, basically, I don't know, the path of destruction to get past the revolution looks like in the first place.
Well, part of the problem with that, of course, is anyone who sort of talks about destruction in the context of revolution gets tarred with the feathers of the anti-civilization perspective or the anarcho-primitivist perspective that more or less implies that for us to live in a better world, 90% of humanity would have to be somehow conveniently eliminated.
Right.
And so as soon as you go down that road, you sort of cut yourself off from polite conversation.
Yeah, which of course is absurd, because the only reflection in my head at the moment is historical. I'm thinking about Russia after the revolution, and France after the revolution, and Spain after the revolution, and like they had to pick up the pieces just to move on with daily life, and that was a week of a lot of destruction there. And
but it didn't look like 90% of the population.
No, and I'm not. I'm saying that leap I find is that's you have to work hard to want that leap.
No, and I think for anarchists in particular, after Spain, you know, I mean, Stuart Christie's project, which, you know, to sort of like in a silly way talk about it, has been to document all the different ways in which anarchists attempted to assassinate Franco.
Right.
Right. And sort of lived in the shadow of the failed revolution.
It's true. I am also a fan of Bolo Bolo, and as I get farther away from it, and it's been more years since I've read it, when I start to think about what my vision of a utopia looks like, it always kind of rotates around PM's central tenets. And I mean, first of all, you have to appreciate how much fun he made of himself and the general spirit of the book. But it's not a book review. We'll set that aside. But the idea of the bolos and the canas, I'm not sure if I've ever heard anybody say
that.
It's
a household, right?
Yeah, the smaller structures inside the bolos, C-A-N-A-S, K-A-N-A-S?
That was
K-A-N-A. Yeah, something like that, but again, I've never heard anybody say it out loud. You know, dealing with the reality of numbers and how much that matters, and talking about these things in terms of scale and how much that matters.
I think daily life lived outside of single-family dwellings would be a very different life than the life that, like, when I think about the 500 people that live in our neighborhood, it's blocks and blocks of single-family dwellings.
Absolutely. With which we have no relationship. I lived in the house that I live in for 5 years now, and I met one of my neighbors across the street for the first time yesterday, and she's now one of three people on my street that I've actually have a conversation with and could tell you what their names are. So, but I think that PM reflects an important thing, which we, to some extent, do, not even just as anarchists, but just as general members of society, is that self-association that we, you know, creating communities based on the people that we want to be with, which we do now, and not necessarily so far as where we live, even though you and I come from the Midwest, where there are plenty of communities that are still built on ethnicity and history and those kinds of things, which you seem to have less of that in California. But, you know, the people that you spend most of your time with are the people that you go to the gun club with, or that you, you know, go to your book club with, or that you, you know, play canasta with, or whatever it is. And I think that there's an organic thing in there about building the rest of the way that we live our lives on top of that. And dealing with the realities of capitalism in the now, and And, you know, regardless of how we get from here to there, we're still going to have to deal with the detritus of this world.
If there weren't such a thing as global capitalism, and if whatever bolo we created vis-a-vis the revolution existed that didn't require economics outside of the bolo, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much detritus you'd necessarily have to deal with if you were prepared, you know, and survived the revolution bolo intact. Anyways, you're going a different direction.
No, I appreciated that PM did talk about salvage and you know, kind of reclaiming the things that are useful, and so
he definitely was friendly to the internet, and this was written in the 80s.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And I find that I have read pieces, essays about things like this, and people either want to spend all their time talking about these kinds of nuts and bolts, which I don't think is useful, or want to not engage with them at all, act like it doesn't exist, and I think both of those positions are not as interesting. And I also want, usually when I have these conversations, the place where I kind of stand at is one of the most important to me, is there not being a roadmap. I want there to be room for things to figure out things as we go along, and to not have all of the answers to all the questions before get there, because we couldn't possibly anticipate what all the questions are before we get there.
No, but I think it's appropriate to try to answer this question as good faith as possible, even though
absolutely.
I sort of reject the premise of the question.
Sure. Yeah, even though I think my favorite answer to the question was a movie that I have never seen, but that a friend of mine many, many years ago told me about, where a movie where everybody over you have a gem or a crystal on you.
Logan's Run.
Is this Logan's Run? Which I haven't ever actually seen, but the idea that at some point you're too tainted by your age and experience to help make the world newer and better, and so you just have to go. And so the idea that regardless of our politics and our good intentions, we are so fully immersed in capitalism that if we get a new thing, that you gotta let, I don't know what, the newborns, the toddlers, mm-hmm. just figure it out for themselves. Or there's something intriguing and obviously amusing about that idea. And even if it itself isn't practical, I think there are important things in there to pay attention to and take with us, I suppose. I'm fresh off of having a how could you possibly live in a world without police with a total normal, my friend's father. Yeah. And so some of this ringing in my head right now. And it's my babbling, I suppose.
Yeah. It's funny to think about fundamentally how different the Bolo Bolo vision is to a traditional anarcho-communist vision, which most anarchists more or less share, which is a world without coercion and without statecraft and without exchange relationships. But sort of Bolo Bolo is one of the most fully fleshed versions of that sort of an anarcho-communist world that actually, I think, exposes a whole bunch of details. Because I think that when one reads a Fields Factories type book nowadays, it feels like the world has moved so far past that kind of a simple vision that sort of vision seems impossible. I will say though that you mentioning a dystopia reminds me of sort of something that maybe a lot of people would consider as a utopian vision for the future. And so for me, I feel like the famous science fiction utopia that most reflects the world that we live in is Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because I feel as though most people's daily life is experienced by how it is that they cope
mm-hmm.
with sort of the shit that they have to deal with, you know, 10 hours a day. And it used to be that my vision of Bolo Bolo was like very clear and how I would want to not live in that sort of a world. But I really do think that a lot of bolos, especially in the transition period, would basically be filled with people who are drug addled and sort of zombified out just as a way of coping with the transition and
that seems reasonable to me. Didn't a drug company recently come out with a happy pill called Soma?
Not sure if it was a drug company, but there have been some people playing around with this stuff.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just like the food company that's
Soylent Green, yes, as some kind of energy squeeze something or bar or something.
It's a food replacement.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yes. I guess I assume that there has to be room for, you know, there's so many details in here that just it's so hard to gloss over and step around, like they don't matter, but we'll do that. That, you know, despite the path from here to there, that once you're there, there are still going to be people that don't want to be there.
Yeah.
And there has to be room for people to, I don't know,
hold
fast to the days before and sure. not belong and, you know, where everything, you know, that within these walls, it looks just as much as it possibly can as, you know, Manhattan 2012 did or something like that. Yeah, and so I imagine that those are places that'll still be full of whatever the then version of Netflix is and lots of drinking and Soma and
I think that there'll be full bolos of people who coordinate. Yeah.
I think there will be many, many bolos that because what's a bolo? 500 people? Is that right?
That's the concept, yeah.
Seems like a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because I do, and I don't know where this comes from. Maybe you do the notion of only as many people as whose names and faces you can remember.
Yeah, from a different place, but yeah.
And I think I've gotten it from someone else, so I don't actually know what the source is. Yeah. But I actually think that's a better representation of how we can actually, you know, if the way that we govern, for lack of a better word, our lives and make decisions is actually about relationships and communications with individuals, or at least the individuals that are going to care enough to step up. I think that kind of quality would be really important. And 500 seems like a lot of people, even if you assume that only half of those people are going to care and show up to talk about whatever the issue of the day is we're talking about, that's still a lot of people. And that feels like the longest meeting ever. So I think that number, the canas, that's how those break out would be an important way to talk about how we live our lives on a daily basis.
Thank you for talking to me.
Thank you.
Weekly Anarchist Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org. This is a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. It has nearly a decade of questions and answers. The question this week is, what would we do about violent people who are already in prison? Parentheses, I am an anarcho-communist, and close parentheses. The explanation of the question goes, I know we can help teach the next generation and all that stuff, but what do we do about the rapists and murderers who are already in jail? If we were to topple the state tomorrow, all those people do not just disappear. Answer number one, who is we? What is violence? How are you picturing the state getting toppled? Surely that is a crucial part of the question. As hard as I try, I can't figure out how your question makes sense outside of a classic revolutionary scenario. For instance, suddenly we, trademarked we, have the power to decide how to punish bad people, but they're still defined as bad by the same constructs that some of us are fighting against. Put another way, the people who have the violence done against them, and their friends and family, would presumably be the people who would decide what to do. And maybe this would include the friends and family of the person who'd done wrong, and maybe the wrongdoer as well, depending on the situation. Or maybe no one would decide anything, maybe people would just move away, like they do now, and or get ostracized by some folks and not by others. I expect there would be a lot of different ways to deal with messed up behavior, and all of them would work in some ways and not work in others. Answer 2. One of the many frustrating aspects of the judicial system for me is the acceptance of the idea that we can't decide what is right or wrong for ourselves, that someone we have no connection to, who knows nothing about us or our situation, is allowed to decide whether or not we have been wronged by another, and then make a decision about the fate of that person. Is it so crazy to think that we could empower ourselves to take back that authority in our own lives and communities? Example. Not the best, but there really never is a perfect example. If someone breaks into my home, I don't want to call a stranger, the police, to make them whisk the person off so that another stranger, the judge jury, can decide whether or not they were really in my home and whether or not that was okay. I should be able to confront them at that moment, in that place. In the time it would take to call the police, One could instead call friends and neighbors if they felt they needed someone else involved. When you get into more serious matters, like instances of sexual assault or murder, things will always be tricky. But the current justice system has proven that it is ineffective at both identifying the correct perpetrator and stopping them from doing something again, except in cases of lifelong imprisonment death. Who's to say that the people directly involved couldn't do a better job of finding out who did it and finding a correct solution? While I do recognize the problematic aspects of vigilante justice, I personally find no fault in physical confrontation of someone who has harmed you or telling them that they must leave town. But there is also room for talking through such things, understanding a situation, learning from our mistakes, and moving on in a way that those directly involved deem appropriate. And we must recognize the cause of crime. Personally, I don't believe that people are born murderers or rapists. Society, the conditions of their lives, especially as children, and a variety of other factors affect what decisions people make. So we must take a look at the causes of violence in the first place. The disempowerment that comes from economic, racial, class-based, etc. oppression that may cause someone to lash out and seek power over another. The obsession with power that this society tries to force feed us that causes those with power to desire more at any cost. The message that empowerment or power over are both power and therefore interchangeable, equal, and necessary to our well-being. I apologize if this sounds vague or intangible, but the abolition of prisons is far more complicated than the simple destruction of a few walls. We could rid ourselves of prisons tomorrow, but we would find that people would simply replace them. Same goes for police. We could kill all cops, but new cops, even if under a different name, would pop up everywhere. As long as there is a need for such institutions, they will continue to exist. We need to change the way we view ourselves and each other, our communities, our relations, etc. We must rid ourselves of a need for prisons. First and foremost, we must empower ourselves, our friends, our communities, to take back that control, to recognize that we don't need the mediation of strangers to decide what is good or bad, right or wrong, for us. You don't want to waste your time, get back down to plan. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Chisel, produced and narrated by Aragorn, Chisel, and Tom. And we thank Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org to learn more, Introduction to Anarchism, anarchy101.org, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material, littleblackcart.com, news and up-to-the-minute commentary, Anarchist News.